and Bill Belichick, right? Those guys, difficult to evaluate. Actually, I'll be honest. I didn't think Deion Sanders was all that difficult to evaluate. You got to look at the entirety of it. I realize it's going to be tougher for him now without Shedeur Sanders and without Travis Hunter. But we're talking about a guy that inherited a 1-11 program, and what'd they go 9-4 this past season?
So
And so, I
I
mean, I
look at
had
it.
Deion top
I'm with you.
25,
I think Deion's a pretty good coach. Like I
and I mean
understand
he ended up at 33, so pretty much smack dab in the middle on our list,
because
which
to
I thought
me
was a little bit low.
they were, I believe, 1-11, and then he got him to 5-7 the next year. Was it 4-8 or 5-7 in year one?
I'll look.
It was either 4-8, 5-7, but like that was literally a one-win team, and they had several like one-score losses where they could have immediately been a bowl team in year one, and I think that was an outstanding coaching job. And then last year, I think they were a game away from basically being in the Big 12 title game with a chance to go to the playoff.
Without a doubt. Yeah. So they won four games this first season and then nine this past year. And what does it look like in 25? I don't know. Like, getting to a bowl game would be a good outcome without Shador, without Travis Hunter. But I mean, he's done a really good job. And then Belichick, like,
I think with
that's a
Belichick,
tough one to
I
evaluate.
think I'd take the Top Meyer cop out. I think it has to be not applicable.
Well, it's
Because
just.
I just feel like, I think I've said it to you. I only see two outcomes with North Carolina this year. We're going to look up in October because their schedule is very manageable. We're going to look up in October and either realize, man, doubting maybe the greatest NFL coach of all time, maybe that was dumb. Like, or we're going to look up and realize like the entire chaos of the offseason should have been a giant red flag that this was not going to work.
No
Like I don't
doubt. I mean,
see
it's like,
like a casual 7-5.
well, it's like, where would you have ranked Michael Jordan on a list of active NBA players when he came back to play for the Wizards?
Yeah, I don't know. Like it, I mean I think that's a fair comp. And then there's also the element like he's never done it in college.
Right. So I was a little bit higher on Belichick. I had him at 46 out of 68. He ends up at 54. Which I felt like maybe a tad disrespectful when you look at some of the
Yeah,
coaches that he's behind.
I'm going to give everybody a blanket pass because I think it's impossible to divorce yourself from everything that has gone on this offseason.
Right. But I mean, he's below Clark Lee. He's below Brent
He's
Venables.
below
He's
Hugh
below
Freeze.
Barry
I
Odom.
was proud that y'all ranked Rich Rod ahead of Hugh. That made me happy.
Yeah, well, that was another one where I'm like, come on. Okay, what happened here? And you're a victim to this too, Jeffrey. Like, nostalgia, man. Like, come on now. This ain't Rich Rodriguez who had Pat White and Steve Slayton. I
No,
mean,
but I
this
do
isn't
think this is true.
2005. I mean, what are we doing?
Here's where I tip my cap to Rich. The Michigan job was always a horrible fit, but I've watched him run offenses with not a lot of talent, and he still moves the football even today. Goes and takes Jacksonville State because he's willing to do it and makes them a very good football team. I think the guy can still coach.
Yeah, I was the low man. I was the low man on Rich Rod in
Well,
our
like
voting.
comparing him to Hugh, one guy still moves the football at this level, and the other guy doesn't.
Boy, that Hugh Freeze golf swing, boy. Whew.
I give him this though. It is effective. It's a disaster to look at. But like of all the coaches, I think most of their handicaps are wrong. I think Hughes is actually legitimate.
What's his handicap?
It's
Do you
like a
know?
7 or 8 right now.
Oh, wow. Good for him, man.
Well,
That's
Hugh
great.
keeps the boosters happy. He plays a decent amount of golf. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna get into some of the lists from The Athletic, also more from the world of sports. We'll do that next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Robert Irwin Jewelers has done it again. Tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m. at the Perkins Extended location, the Laurelwood Diamond Showroom, it's a full 60% off sale. No marking up to mark down, but just a full 6 hours starting at 10 a.m., 60% off anything in the showcases. They only do this sale once every few years at each store. They've done it already in South Haven and in Bartlett. Now they're doing it at the Diamond Showroom right there on Perkins Extended. That means 60% off designer jewelry, 60% off engagement rings, bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones, even name brand watches. are 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from, so shop early for the best selection. They even have special financing available. You can take up to 6 months to pay interest-free at Robert Irwin Jewelers. This Saturday, in-store only. For complete details, visit rijewelers.com. This will be the final six-hour 60% off sale for the year. Let's get into the list. Doug Gottlieb. All right, Cobb, your boy is at it again. Green Bay has filed for a waiver from the NCAA to allow its men's basketball team to compete in the basketball tournament, the TBT, the $1 million winner-take-all center tournament that features many high-profile college alumni teams and active professional players. The waiver request, which was filed last week, acknowledges that TBT is not certified by the NCAA or fall within legislated expectations, but makes the case it is a suitable replacement for a foreign tour, which permits college programs to travel abroad to play against professional teams once every 4 years. Okay, I actually think the grounds for the request is not bad. Cobb, I think this is a disastrous decision because you're going to put a team in that's still probably not going to win.
Green Bay's active men's basketball roster would go out and get smacked around by Boeheim's army, a bunch of 34-year-old beer-bellied, weekend hoopers. Yeah, bad look.
I mean, right? Are you agree with me? Like, the odds of them winning, I feel like, I don't know if they'd be the favorite. Like, some of these teams are former NBA guys, and their roster's god-awful.
Part of me, though, would actually be okay with this because if we got active college teams playing in TBT, now all of a sudden we have college basketball summer league. That sounds like fun. I'm fine with that.
It also, I think, though, for that reason, right, that feels like why it's going to get denied.
Well, there's no way the NCAA is going to allow this. If they wouldn't allow Syracuse and Colorado to play a spring game against each other, which, I mean, come on. There's no way they're going to sign off on this. But there are no restrictions against, like, say, for example, you know, we used to see it all the time. There's the Bluff City League in Memphis, right?
Yep.
Active college players participated in that all the time. I think it's become less common in the NIL era because it's like, why am I going to go play ball for free, risk an injury or whatever? Same thing in Knoxville. They used to do the Rocky Top League. Active Tennessee players, a bunch of D2 guys who were active players would play in that thing. So who's to say, okay, maybe the NCAA says, we're not going to allow the Green Bay Phoenix, coached by Douglas Gottlieb, to participate in this. But, like, can you stop a group of active college players from banding together outside of the official university jurisdiction? I don't see how you could stop that.
So, according to ESPN's story, there is a precedent for active NCAA players to compete. In 2022, Jared Houston, then an active player with D3 Emerson, played for We Are D3, which lost in the first round. So,
well, kind of a precedent. D3 is a non-scholarship. You know, there's a difference.
But. Yeah, but he's still an NCAA player.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of for it, but from Green Bay's perspective, I'm with you. I'm like, I don't know that this would go real well for y'all, you know?
So Green Bay apparently filed a waiver requesting the same from last year, but the denial came too late in the process to properly appeal the ruling. That felt strategic to me.
Here's another one. You see this one from Green Bay? They're trying to get a 28-year-old, or they have signed a 28-year-old to play for them. He spent 5 years in the military and has been playing like JUCO ball or something, and he's going to go play for Green Bay starting his career at age 28.
I mean, it's not all that dissimilar. We used to see this. Remember when guys that were baseball players that failed, that bottomed out, like would go back and play college football? Chris Winkie?
Yeah, John David Booty.
John David Booty. Was it Chad Hutchinson? Stanford had one.
Yeah.
He was like a...
Tennessee had a safety who did it. Brent Brewer, who did that. Yeah.
Didn't one of the receivers... The future. Washington. Didn't he do that?
Kelly Washington.
Kelly Washington,
yeah,
wasn't he a baseball player?
Oh yeah, dude, he was a really good player too. A really good football player. Had an arm. They put him at quarterback sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we used to see that. That doesn't really happen anymore. I don't know why that's really going.
By the way, this is somewhat related, but slightly a tangent. I was watching the SEC baseball tournament the other day.
We've got it on in studio right now because I can't change the remote in the studio batteries don't work. So it's just on SEC Network and I can't change it. But Ole Miss is Arkansas playing right now.
You're welcome,
Jeff. But Missouri's out there pitching Sam Horn. He's a quarterback and he's like their ace. That's how bad they are at baseball. It's like,
the best. So I saw this going around online. So for those that have not been following college baseball, which I presume is about 95% of the audience, Texas is in a similar position to like Auburn was at the end of like the last 2-3 weeks of the year. They cannot play a game, and they're going to be the number one seed no matter what. Right. So yesterday, they started a walk-on who had thrown 6 2/3. They were looking to get the hell out of Hoover.
And he shut Tennessee down.
Yeah, that was the other thing. I was like, I looked at his numbers, like, I have no idea who this guy pitched against, but his numbers were pretty good even before the, like, shutting down a pretty good offense.
It's funny sometimes. You get a junk baller out there who throws mid-80s that you have no tape on, no scouting report, and it's like, oh, man.
Left-handed and slow.
Yeah.
What was the other thing I was thinking about with I am curious, what? I guess maybe sports have become so specialized that now even when minor league baseball players flame out, like, they've only played it was far more common 20 years ago to have the Joe Mauer. Like, people forget, Joe Mauer was like a 5-star quarterback.
Right.
And so, like, when Joe Mauer, obviously, like, it worked out for him. But, like, there were always people thinking, like, he was going to go back. Like, if it didn't work out, he was going to go back and play football. Greg Paulus was the football. And then he went back and played at Syracuse.
Quarterback at Syracuse after playing basketball at Duke.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, and then
Quincy
one of the
Carter.
most prominent examples is Cam Spencer's brother, Pat Spencer. He was the lacrosse star. Loyola or something?
One of the Baltimore schools, I think.
Yeah, right. Anyway, lacrosse star ends up going to play basketball at Northwestern to close out his college career. And then, lo and behold, the dude ends up in the NBA. Like, that, there's one.
He got playoff minutes.
Yeah, in the playoffs. I mean, what? That I never saw that one coming, right? Like, the lacrosse to basketball transition, that's not one that, like, I guess might be me. I might have a disrespect for, like, the lacrosse athletes. Like, maybe they're better athletes than I thought they were.
I think it's regional. If you're telling me kid from the DMV, those guys are better athletes. Like, who the Notre Dame receiver that caught the big pass against Penn State. He's like a elite lacrosse player.
Yeah.
But like in the South, I don't know. I used to always view like the kids that got cut from baseball played lacrosse. And that used to always drive me insane. It's like guys that were not athletic went and played lacrosse and they were like all state. That used to drive me insane.
Right.
But it is a much bigger deal. Like in the DC area, Like that area, you could talk me into, like, elite guys or elite athletes are playing.
You know, I kind of hate single sport specialization.
I can't stand it
unless you're going to be really good. Like, okay, let's say I had gone all in on playing golf. What would have been the best case option there? Maybe I could have played like NAIA or something. I mean, like, unless you're just truly elite, like, why are you trying to only play one sport? You know,
if you do enough and you have good enough grades, you can play somewhere.
Somewhere.
But, I mean, I am with you entirely. I also, you know, my theory is, like, I don't want a quarterback that doesn't play baseball. You have to make throws. Like, you have to, in baseball, you have to make, oftentimes, throws from different arm angles, and you have to be accurate. Like, you have, like, even outfielders, you got to hit the cutoff, man. Like,
you got to be able to layer your throw, especially
correct.
As an outfielder and as a shortstop, because you got to have that flip throw to second. You got to, you know, you're throwing from, depending on where the ball is hit, you're throwing a varying distance to first base. You know, and then, hey, sometimes you got to put a little zip on it because you got a fast hitter. And then sometimes you got the old catcher who's just, you know, wobbling down the line, and you can lob it over there, you know. So I think Pat Mahomes has made more people realize that. I will say this.
Rodgers too. Like, yeah.
Yeah, but you can tell, like, people who played baseball growing up, even in basketball, I can tell it. Like, if you told me that Jaren Jackson Jr. never played baseball growing up, I would believe that immediately.
I think
people who play baseball have good hands and good hand-eye coordination. And people play baseball, they don't have that.
I'll tell you what, though. On the flip side, it's what's so aggravating about Zach Edey. I think the guy should have good... Like, the actual concern I have with Edey, because everything we saw this year, I basically saw what I expected. Like, I was not saying, like, this guy's going to be all NBA. But what really disappointed me the most were his hands this year.
That's a good point for a baseball guy.
Yeah.
Which he was at 7 foot, you know, even though he was always tall, but baseball was his first sport.
And I was going to say, like, I give Jaren a pass. When you are that gangly and that long, baseball is an awkward sport to play.
That's true.
Because, like, A, think about how hard it is for a lot of those guys to even, like, handle a basketball, then put a baseball in their hands.
So small.
I wonder what a baseball feels like in Jaren's hands.
Like a golf ball for us.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, like, think about, like, when you're trying to throw, it's where I will never understand, like, A, most golfers are not super athletic beyond golf. Like, there's the occasional ones, like, I think Scheffler played some basketball. Spieth played some basketball. Gary Woodland, I don't know if anyone knows this. He played JUCO basketball. You might have heard it once or twice. But, like, throwing a golf ball is super awkward. I never get why they throw it. They always look so stupid. They look almost as stupid when they try to throw as when they try to do a high five.
Golfers?
Tiger's biggest contributions to the game beyond the buckets of money was at least making, like, golfers having a template of how to look cool.
Now, I won't argue on that. And what makes you wonder, too, what, like, Tiger, I think, is one of those people you look at and you're like, oh, yeah, he could have probably been really good at anything.
Probably. I mean, I don't know, like, foot speed-wise. Like, I don't, like, but he has the discipline to, like, make himself competent at everything.
Wanted to pursue, like, high-level military-grade tactical training.
Is the tennis ball secure?
Level endurance tests and all these, you know. Like, that man could have survived and thrived in a lot of different athletic arenas.
Yeah. All right. The Athletic. All right. So, Cobb, we had The Athletic was ranking the 25 best in college football of the 2000s in honor, of course, it being 2025. And, well, it's that time of the year. So today we finished out the rankings with programs of the last 25 years.
Programs.
Yeah, you're either program or program guy.
Program.
I'm a program guy. But I would hire program guys. They rank Ohio State 1, Bama 2, Oklahoma 3, Georgia 4, LSU 5, Clemson 6, Oregon 7. I believe that's the only team in the top 7 that doesn't have a national title. USC 8, Texas 9, Florida 10, Michigan 11, Florida State 12. So the only team in the top 12 that doesn't have a national title is Oregon. But here's my deal. I understand the argument is that Ohio State had greater consistency. Like, they didn't have as many bad seasons. Ohio State only has one losing season in the 25 years, whereas Bama has 3. I just do not think you can reasonably make a case that when you think about college football in the last 25 years, how is it not Alabama?
Yeah, they have double the number of national titles. The debate stops there. It's Alabama, and it's not really even close. I felt like maybe a bit of anti-SEC collusion here, because look at it. I mean, unless you want to include Texas and Oklahoma, which you can't do because they've spent nearly
you're not talking. It's including Texas and Oklahoma is the equivalent of when the ACC tried to claim Katie Ledecky.
Yeah, fantastic! Wow, look at all of our swimming national titles now. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, but think about this. Top 25 programs in college football in the 21st century. Auburn 15, Florida 10, LSU 5, Georgia 4, Alabama 2. I mean, this kind of makes you realize that, hey, maybe the SEC is either being undervalued here or let's, like, really evaluate how deep the SEC actually is, because the SEC fancies itself to be that if you ask them, they'd say, oh, we had half of the top 25 programs in this century so far. But this list really suggests otherwise. I mean, noticeably absent, like a Tennessee, also absent a Missouri that thrived under Gary Pinkle, won a couple of SEC East titles. They're probably not even close to being on this list. So, South Carolina peaked under Steve Spurrier, had some really good seasons there. Not on this list. Kentucky's been sustained in their success under Mark Stoops, not on this list. So it's kind of like a smack in the face a little bit for the SEC when you kind of look at their lack of representation here.
I'm trying to figure out if it was a committee that voted.
Surely. Also, how about this? Urban Meyer's got three programs on here. Programs.
But
excuse me. He got three programs.
The
he got
thing,
Utah,
though, is like Florida. when you read the top, it's Stuart Mandel has the byline. Editor's note, all week the Athletic has been looking back at the best of the first 25 years of the 2000s in college football. We as college football fans often suffer from short memories. This exercise will serve as a nice reminder that most programs, as Cobb would say, have not been as good or exactly as bad as they are right now over the course of 25 years. The factors,
the factors I consider,
that's to me like that's it. Like he does not sip SEC Kool-Aid.
No, I mean, so that's probably why he's got USC. Where has he got USC?
He has USC, I think, like eighth.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, I also think, like, I think Miami's too high. Like, I know at the, 2000, 2001, 2002. But, like, post-Coker, what, their two best seasons are a Mark Richt year where he got him to like 10-2.
Right.
And then
Manny was okay. Mario's been okay. I mean, I'm with you. Miami's too high. And then USC, to the same point, what have they done post Carroll? I mean, Clay Helton and Lane Kiffin and Lincoln Riley, they ain't doing it.
Sark.
For me, man. I mean,
so Lincoln's first year, if they would have beaten Utah in the Pac-12 title game, they would have gotten to the playoff. But other than that, how nationally relevant have they been?
I agree. And I think you could make the case that LSU ought to be ahead of Oklahoma. We got to care about national titles. Oklahoma has one. LSU has three. LSU has demonstrated sustained excellence over the tenures of multiple coaches during the 21st century. They've got who we rank as a top 10 coach now, and Brian Kelly. Sure, he's been a little bit disappointing so far, but they've produced a Heisman Trophy winner. They're still winning 10 games. And then Oklahoma, great under Bob Stoops, but one national title. Very good, maybe even under Lincoln Riley. But
do they have a playoff win
under Lincoln? I don't think they did. So I don't know.
Okay, then we got into the top 25 players. This was where. All right, so let's see. Who did it? So Feldman ranked the players. All right. Number one, I think he absolutely nailed. I understand.
Hold on, don't tell me. Is it Cam?
Yeah.
It Cam? Yeah, okay.
I get it. It's only really 1 year. But that 1 year, like I said yesterday, that was an 8-4 Auburn team the year before and an 8-4 Auburn team the year after. There was one thing that was different. And he's the biggest cheat code I've ever seen. Two was Reggie Bush. I just don't think people can understand like what a phenomenon Reggie Bush was. Like,
yeah, I don't have any problem with that. There's a lot of bias here though for like that season, because that's also their best game, is that Rose Bowl, the USC Texas Rose Bowl. That's their best. You can just tell that year has a fondness in their hearts when they're putting this list together.
Three was Ndamukong Suh. Four is Joe Burrow. Five was Lamar Jackson. Six was Ed Reed. Seven was Vince Young. Eight was Tim Tebow. That does feel way too low for Tebow.
Yeah, I think I'd have had Tebow ahead of Vince Young. But again, it's like they seem enamored with that Rose Bowl game, and that was Reggie Bush versus Vince Young. He was, I'd say you could argue that Vince Young was, individual game-wise, individual moments, just more iconic than Tim Tebow. But, I mean, what Tebow did for Florida, for Urban Meyer, for that program, yeah. Better, more bigger body of work, I would say. Maybe not the iconic moments, unless you want to, you know, talk about crying at the presser and
yeah.
all that.
All right, then we go to, I guess this could be the other argument with ranking Ohio State as a program over Alabama. I think the only realistic argument, if you're trying to make it football related, I think it's wrong. If you want the argument to be this, that Alabama as a program versus Ohio State as a program is not the same.
Alabama was only Saban.
Correct.
But if you're gonna make that argument, LSU's got to be higher because they won national titles under Les Miles and Ed Orgeron. I mean,
well, and also, like, to me, I guess we'll have to see with DeBoer because he hasn't done it yet. Since Bear Bryant, every coach at Alabama has won 10 games at least once, and there were some incompetent coaches during that time.
Yeah. I mean, you think of it. Did Shula?
Yep.
Mike
he
Shula
went.
Won?
Yep. He went 10-2 one year.
Wow.
One, Nick Saban. Two, Urban Meyer. Three, Pete Carroll. Four, Kirby Smart. Five, Dabo Swinney. Six, Bob Stoops. Seven, Jim Tressel. Eight, Jim Harbaugh. Nine, Mac Brown. 10, Chris Peterson. 11's Ryan Day. Like, I just can't decide. Maybe I'm just
that's
being
where you'd have him among active coaches.
But
yeah?
It's like, what has Ryan Day done that is like ahead of Brian Kelly? Like, I'm not even the world's biggest like Brian Kelly guy. I think he's a good coach, but it's like, he's had the Ohio State job, and he's not exactly maximized it.
The recency bias on that one.
12, Brian Kelly. 13, Jimbo Fisher. 14, Frank Beamer. 15 was Gary Patterson. 16, James Franklin. Les Miles, 17. Mark Richt was 18. Kyle Whittingham was 19. Lincoln Riley was 20. And I'm still like, I think the more time goes on, like, Lincoln's resume is not going to hold up as well as I think everyone loves to, at least his PR team likes.
We're talking about a guy who could be like on the hot seat if he doesn't have a good year.
Well, and also, like, when you look at their schedule, it's like, I don't know how he's not on the hot seat. I know his buyout's massive, but it's like, are they really going to do it again? I do think you're right, though, because the other thing is, it felt like in best games, I think that era of college football of like the first like 5 to 6 years of the century, they get really overvalued. And here would be my argument. I think it actually makes sense that they get overvalued, because we didn't have every game on TV.
So the ones that you
correct.
Got to see really stuck out. I do kind of miss that in a sense of like, you get so overwhelmed on a Saturday afternoon now with quad boxing and second screening.
Do I have the right games on? Like,
yeah, that you just sometimes don't appreciate when you get a banger, because you're always looking for a banger. And it's like, I deserve to have a banger on the TV screen right now. And you know, it used to be up to the provider, like what game you would see, or the network execs, like they're going to show you a game in your region, and you just got to deal with what
absolutely.
They decide for you.
I mean, people don't realize this, like conference games in the SEC and the Big Ten used to not be guaranteed to be on TV.
Man, did you see John Skipper, former ESPN,
the pay-per-view,
right, saying that college football eventually will go back to pay-per-view? That scared me, because he's somebody with enough experience in the business to where you can't just dismiss his opinion straight up. I don't necessarily agree, but the fact that he said that made me a little disturbed, because to me that suggests going the way of boxing, and that's not what we want.
So I don't dismiss the opinion. I also think that it is impossible to prognosticate, because I think the only way that happens is if the television model itself literally just like falls apart. So like, I don't know if like it's going to be pay-per-view in the sense of, all right, you're buying this one game. But like, is he like in the end, okay, let's say linear television falls apart, we're still going to have the ESPN, whatever this new app is that's going to have all of their stuff. I can see where it's more a la carte, but I find it hard to believe like you're going to have to opt in to buy college football.
You would just lose so many viewers that way that it would be hard to sustain the economic model via pay-per-view, especially when the TV rights are now literally responsible for paying the players. I guess
I could say in honor of, I'm not going to dismiss him because he's run ESPN. Where I'd maybe meet him is if we can't figure out how to keep the revenue streams going, I think his argument would be like, you're just going to keep seeking. The argument would be you are keep seeking new ways for revenue, and another additional way for revenue would be making it pay-per-view. But that would also kind of, to me, like, that would also entail that they don't have television deals, or the conferences wouldn't have television deals or the equivalent.
Well, to me, I view the pay-per-view game as like your one ESPN Plus game of the year now, which I realize for Memphis fans, you get a lot of ESPN Plus games. But the
ESPN Select.
Like, yeah, right. For the SEC schools, you get your one ESPN Plus game. It's probably when you're playing your FCS opponent. And that's the day when you decide whether or not you're a diehard. Or is this the day that I'm just going to, you know, go with my wife to the pumpkin patch and take fall pictures, right? I think, you know, that's kind of the day where you decide how serious of a fan you are. Am I going to log in or pay for ESPN Plus so I can watch this game? Or am I just going to say nah? And I mean, as much as we like to pretend that everybody in this country is such a diehard college football fan and yada, 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 if you make them decide, am I going to pay money beyond, above and beyond what I'm already paying for various streaming services to watch this game today, I think you would be unpleasantly surprised at how many say, no, I'm not going to do that.
I actually think when we really talk big picture, what is the biggest crisis? I think this, what we're talking about, is the biggest crisis. We are now getting to the point where you are nickel and diming your fan base to pay for everything, that there's going to be a breaking point. And we're already starting to see, like, I think a large portion of why these schools are getting as desperate as they are in their behavior is they're experiencing donor fatigue. The same people that they're hitting up for everything have just, I think, 100% there's donor fatigue. And then I also think, like, as season ticket prices continue to increase, as like, if you just start adding more and more and more, there's going to be a breaking point.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit about the games of the weekend. We'll do that next right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. VIP Play is live in Tennessee now, and that means it's live always. 200 plus leagues, numerous bet types, props, and options. If you have a bet in mind and you can't find anything on the sportsbook, the VIP Play team will create it for you. You can check out the specials page every day for bets you cannot find anywhere else in Tennessee. Also, you can go claim your VIP Play welcome bonus, and that means when you bet $5 or more, you'll get $100 in bonus bets instantly. Just use the promo code Odyssey, AUDACY, to take advantage of the welcome bonus. Also, VIP Players Club sweepstakes is going on. That means every bet you make on VIP Play gets you entries into the Players Club sweepstakes, as well as every dollar you bet, and you can even earn 10 times the entries on parlays and same game parlays for your chance to win $10,000. VIP Play, where everyone gets treated like a VIP. Gambling problem, call 1-800-889-9789. You must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to wager. Sure. All right. My fault there. I needed to mute that. That's on me. All right. Games of the weekend. I think, are we at the point now where it's just like, we're just clinging to the Knicks-Pacers series?
Absolutely. I'm still holding out hope that Minnesota can find life on its home floor. Maybe they've got a first half in them like the Grizzlies had when
Oklahoma City
came to the Forum.
The first two games, while game one wasn't the 51-point, the game did kind of rhyme. It's like, all right, blowout in game one. Game two, you got blown out in the third quarter, but in the fourth quarter, you stopped turning the ball over as much, and you kind of, you were close to covering for a few possessions. Like, maybe we'll turn around, and in game three, like, they'll be up 30, and then Ant will get hurt.
That would be my fear. That's what we don't need in the Western Conference Finals. But if they can avoid an injury and have a similar revelation, I give them a chance.
I think this would be the argument. It is more likely that Minnesota is going to shoot the basketball better at home. And what we've seen from OKC throughout much of the playoffs is they shoot the basketball better at home too. So when they go on the road, if they don't shoot it as well and Minnesota shoots it better, like, they can have a puncher's chance.
Yeah, no doubt. But it's all about that Eastern Conference Finals series right now. And we ought to cling to it, because if Oklahoma City sweeps Minnesota, or wins in five, which seems quite plausible, and let's say the Eastern Conference Finals go to seven, then Oklahoma City is going to be real fresh.
Or they rusty.
The finals. Fresh or rusty, I don't know. I mean, you know, they took care of Memphis and then didn't have too much trouble in the second round. So...
No, and even though they lost game one, that was like a game that they really shouldn't have lost. Like, they were in control, and then they didn't put the Nuggets away, and then Jokic was able to win it at the end. I will say this. You know something I'm watching during the playoffs? I think the fouling up threes jumped the shark. I think we're fouling up three way too early. I have no problem up three under 5 seconds if you want to foul. The fouling up three when you have 15 seconds left, that just feels way too early to me.
No, I agree. Especially if you have a timeout, right? Because, okay, they tie the game. So what?
Well, it's like
you still get a ball with plenty of time.
Like, the other thing with the Knicks is, like, I think what happened was they said if Nesmith gets the ball, we're fouling him. But, man, that just puts so much pressure on your free throw shooting. And, like, I get it. The NBA, it's not necessarily like college, but it's like, you know, Cat goes 1 of 2, Ananobi goes 1 of 2. Like, it's not like Indiana was making every free throw either. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I think it's way too early. And the worst case scenario is like, all right, if Nesmith hits a shot, Indiana was going to have to take a shot early in the shot clock. Like, you knew that. The worst case scenario was you were going to get the basketball back and you were going to have the ball deciding the game one way or the other. Like, I felt like the way they played it was the only way that they could face a shot. Like, let's be real. If Halliburton has his foot 2 inches behind, 2 inches further back, they lose in regulation. Like, they played the game the only way you could lose in regulation.
Oh, I mean, the pressure is on tonight. And I think I actually see New York winning this game and probably covering. Last line I saw was Knicks -5.5. It's a back against the wall situation. They outplayed Indiana for 47 minutes the other night, and you can't go down 2-0.
The odds
of Aaron Nesmith having that sort of performance again are probably worse than the odds of the house that you lived in when you were growing up getting struck by lightning twice.
Ewing of BetMGM said over at BetMGM, Nesmith's over-under of threes tonight is 2.5. 99% of the money is on the over.
Mm-hmm.
It almost makes me want to just go take the under, but, like, that is one of those things where you could literally be dead in the first quarter.
Well, his per-game average, I think, is like 2.3 made threes per game or something in that neighborhood. So, you know, they've got the line in the perfect place. You just got to think, though, that the Knicks come out and make a statement.
I mean, I'm with you, but I did think also the same thing with game two with the Cavs. Now, granted, the Cavs had injury problems, but it's like I thought the Cavs were going to win that one, and then, like, they found a way not to.
You know, what kind of saddens me about the early results from the conference finals are the diminished prospects of a Karl Anthony Towns versus Minnesota NBA finals. Because that would have been... Still could be.
Well, and Randall versus the Knicks. Fun. Like, you know what I mean?
Kind of like a classic. I don't know, like, is this a topic of conversation in like Minnesota and New York? Like, oh, who won the trade? Like, who like, you know, because those are high profile transactions when a Karl Anthony Towns moves from Minnesota to New York. And we always want to see who won, right?
I think the
could
answer
could it be that both sides got better?
I think the answer is it's not really that big of a topic of conversation because it was considered a financial move. But I think it's clear to say this. Randall needed a new spot. Like, Randall needed a fresh start. Yeah, and he's clearly playing better, forgetting last night. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we tell your story next, right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Cobb, for today's Don't Tell These Story, Tell Your Story. We got a Jeff Brady of NPR who wrote a fantastic column about electric grills being climate-friendly options to fossil fuel grills. He also wrote, did you know gas stoves pollute your home with benzene, which is linked to cancer? The internet then looked up his Instagram account, and he's just now put in a gas stove in his own home.
What's wrong with charcoal?
Look how much better I am for you. It's just, it's smug. It's trying to like, it's turning basically like your views on the environment into like a religion.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, my man. We'll talk to you next week in studio.
In studio. Looking forward to it.
That is David Cobb. You missed anything about on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, for Cobb, this is Jeffrey Senn. Thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.